talk to Mr. Jesse. Like, somebody was trying. I said, don't have spaghetti for you. That's only a minute. Somebody was trying to get a boat out, and I think he might have gone over to give them a hand. But, you know, there's more than him there. Yeah. I'll just go and get him for you.
Well, are you sure?
Yes, he was here. He's been here all the afternoon.
Okay, thanks.
Hello?
Yeah?
Yes, he's coming. He was just talking to someone on the corner. They must have got the boat out and he was just talking to somebody there. And how are things with you?
Oh, good, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Pa, I'm doing a project about World War II, and I was just wondering if you'd answer a couple of questions for me.
He's got a wonderful book about it.
Has he?
Great big one.
Yeah?
When does it have to be in?
Fairly soon. What it was just to talk about someone that actually served in the war or something.
Yes. Right. Well, here he is anyway. So he'll tell you. But he has got a big book about it if it was any use to you, or quite a few, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay, love.
Okay, see you later.
Hello, Mr. Martin Jr.
Hey, Pa. How are you
going? Good. What do you know?
Oh, not much.
No, not much.
Just usual? Nothing?
Nothing. Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
You're a pretty knowledgeable sort of a bloke, so you can't say you don't know nothing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Does the phone sound like it's echoing to you?
Good.
Do I sound like I'm echoing
to
you?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's quite just the one voice.
Alright, sir.
Quite clear.
What's happened is I'm calling from the shed at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
I put another phone in, but what I've done, I've wired it through a tape recorder so I can record conversations.
Oh, I see.
I was going to ask you a couple of questions about the project I was doing, so I'm taping it all.
Oh, are you? Yeah, okay, yeah.
Right. What I'm doing is a project on World War II.
Yeah.
Just, I had to have to interview someone that was, you know, either served or alive then or something.
Oh, yes,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So if I ask you a couple of questions,
of course I could. Within reason, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alright, which part of the armed forces were you in?
I was in the Air Force, the Royal Australian Air Force.
Right. What was your section called again?
Apart from the basic training, I would have done about three or four training courses.
Right.
And it started off the initial training.
Yeah.
And then I went trained as a flight mechanic.
Right.
And then I served at Point Cook as a flight mechanic for a few months, and then I transferred to another course. They wanted fitter driver motor transports.
Yeah.
So I transferred into that, and then I went to Sydney.
Yeah.
And then in Sydney, I finished that course of about 3 months, and that entitled me to be a fitter driver motor transport, was about the highest pay and the highest pay.
Yeah.
In the ground staff, you know, so it was Group 1, so it was worth money. In those days it was about 12 shillings a day compared to about 5 shillings a day for somebody who was not trained in any specific things, you know.
Yeah.
So, are we going all right?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Okay, mate, yeah. Anyhow, then after finishing the course, I was posted to Richmond Base in New South Wales to a unit called Number 7 Repair and Salvage Unit.
Right.
And we were, that unit done the servicing and the maintenance for the 3 Spitfire squadrons.
Oh, yeah.
There was two English Australian squadron.
Yeah.
And the Australian squadron was led by squadron leader Corwell, Killer Corwell, who actually only died only just recently. And then after that, after a short time, we went to... We got on a troop ship and we sailed to Darwin.
Yeah.
And the 3 Spitfire squadrons naturally were, by this time, they were up there.
Right.
And we set up a base. Our base camp was at Belfield, 60 miles south of Darwin.
Right.
And the 3 Spitfire squadrons were on strips between Belfield and in Darwin.
Yeah.
And that was in 19... we left Sydney in late 1942.
Oh, yeah.
And we were served up there for about 20 months, I got there for.
Yeah.
And then I came home. Do you want to know more?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we came home, and after 20 months' service, up in Darwin, I came home, and I was given a fortnight's leave after all that time.
Yeah.
and then I was posted to Ballarat, and it was a training camp on the technical staff there.
Yeah.
And then soon after that, I was only there for about 3 months, I got another overseas posting. Was the number 6 ACS, which is an airfield construction squadron.
Right.
And then after about 3 months of waiting for a troop ship, we went to Sydney and caught a troop ship in Sydney, and we left Sydney, I think it was around about Easter time in 45, maybe March 45.
Yeah.
And we sailed up to Boratai, which was a big, which was a huge military base with all sorts of equipment, every single thing, you know.
Yeah.
Like a huge warehouse of everything, you know. And we just waited there for a further posting into the further into the war zone.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, the war was progressing very favourably for us by, you know, at this particular time.
Yeah.
And then they realised, the Americans realised they wanted an airstrip, another airstrip put in. In the area, so they selected half the squadron, including myself,
to go
over to this particular spot, and it had to be an island between the North Borneo coast and the Philippines. There's a little chain of islands called the Tawi Tawi Group.
Yeah.
So we went over there. We had two American escorts with us, like the Navy ships.
Yeah.
To make sure that we didn't have any problems getting over there.
Right.
It was about a 5-day trip, I think, and it was due west of Moratai.
Yeah.
So we went over there. We put the airstrip down. We made the airstrip out of coral and shale that was around the reefs. We put that down in about 3 or 4 weeks, I think it would have been.
Yeah.
And then we finished the job, and the Americans came back to pick us up. And actually, at that particular time, it was in Japanese territory, actually.
Oh, right.
But there was no problems.
Yeah.
Actually, we could see the Japanese. We were opposite a Japanese camp. And it would be the distance, say, between, you know, Warneet and the little strip of water, our place, Cannons Creek at Warneet.
Yeah.
We could see them moving around there, but they didn't cause any problem. And I suppose had we been an infantry battalion, there might have been problems.
Yeah.
They didn't. We're a technical squadron, and we weren't going to cause them any trouble anyhow. But anyhow, the work progressed all right. We had a couple of little skirmishes, you know, but nothing this big.
Yeah.
And we put the strip down, and the Americans come and picked us up, and we took us back to Moratai. And we're only back at Moratai for about a fortnight. When we packed up ships again, loaded the LSTs again.
Yeah.
And then this time we were off to Borneo for the invasion at Ballytappen.
All right.
So then that was on the invasion day. That was when we went ashore anyhow. But anyhow, we steamed off down there to Ballytappen. And we got there in and out one afternoon. And then we went ashore the next morning.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad, you know, there's no big problems.
Right.
And then we just continued on there. We had to service the airstrip regularly because we'd sooner get some work done than the Japs had come and blasted all over, you know, like we worked jolly hard.
Yeah.
You know, it was all pick and shovel work virtually, day and night, you know.
Yeah.
Until the war finished. The war finished in September, 3rd of September, and we didn't get away until November. And I got home around about November.
Oh.
November 45.
Yeah.
And then I was given 4 months leave, because that made up for the leave I didn't get. They didn't give me any leave the time we were in Darwin, you know.
Yeah,
they were very good that way, you know. We got 150 quid deferred pay, which was a fair bit of money in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, the basic wage then was about £5 a week, so it was,
right,
you know, 30 weeks wages, I suppose, in real terms. And then I was discharged in March 46, and then I became a civilian again. And I went back to Ford, where I started, to work.
Right.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's there's no. I don't discuss the war itself.
Yeah.
What happened, you know, but not. I think it's a bit personal, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the things you see, but I mean, but that was just basically. You can imagine a lot of things. You know, you can read between the lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lots of things. You know, they didn't have a Spitfire up there for fun, nor did they.
No.
And so it all had a good purpose, but. That was my part of the war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without getting too personal, there's some other questions here. Do you hold any animosity towards the Japanese or the Germans or anything?
It's a very hard question.
Yeah.
They done terrible things.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the prisoners of war, at Ballytappen on our strip, the first people to come down were the prisoners of war from Changi and Singapore and those places.
Yeah.
And North Borneo, and stand back, and there's a big camp. But the things, that we saw, and then trying to get off those aircraft, I still get a little bit emotive about that sort of a thing. That on one particular flight, the nurses came down and nurses were crying.
Yeah.
You know, and this is, we realised then what terrible things the Japanese had done.
Yeah.
You know, they say you forgive and forget. You know, you can forgive, but you can't forget, Charles.
Yeah.
I don't have animosity between for the younger people, but some of the older Japanese, the samurai spirit is very much alive with the older people still.
Yeah.
You know, and that's their culture, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that they worked upon their culture, which was ingrained in them.
Yeah.
And I'd rather suspect that they thought our culture was the same, but our culture certainly does not match the brutality that those people show.
No.
You know, they made the prisoners work.
Yeah.
They flogged the prisoners to death, and as opposed to the Germans in the German camps, see. In the Asian camps, the Australians lost 7,000 men died through sheer hard work and malnutrition and sheer neglect. In the German prisoners of war camps, only a handful died. They were treated in accordance with the Geneva Convention. These people did not believe in anything, any of those conventions. At least the Germans used to honour.
Yeah.
They honoured those agreements.
Hmm.
But no, to answer your question, I can forgive, but I can't forget. And the only reason why I can forgive is the fact that their culture is it's a samurai culture, and I've read quite a few books. I'm reading one now, as a matter of fact, about the Japanese and the samurai influence and whatever, and the shogunism and the Shintoism and all those. But yes, that is their culture, and I doubt very much whether we will ever.
Yeah,
we will ever civilize those people to the extent that what we call civilization.
Yeah,
you know, but they won't change their culture.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what? So obviously, war was what you expected war to be like was very different to what it actually was. Was it? Or?
No. Yeah. Well.
What did you expect? Did you really expect anything, or?
When you're 18, you just go away and you think it's another big experience.
Yeah.
There was what ifs about it, you know.
Yeah.
The you know, of course, or put it this way, you never for once think that you're the one that's going to die.
No.
You know, that's youth. That's the young, you know, that's why young people go to the war. That's obviously the young people get used up.
Yeah.
Because they've got that well, not so much like a fear, but your belief is so strong that the other one is, that the others are wrong and you are right and God will see you through, sort of thing, you know. But there's never any.
No.
Now, it's hard to say what to expect. Naturally, you go away, you know that you're going to be in some sticky situations.
Yeah.
You know, but the only thing that brought it home to me was just before we went ashore at Valley Clapham, we had one of our officers was a lay preacher,
right.
And he was our unofficial chaplain, and he calls together and the folks all at the front of the ship and said a few prayers, and they asked God to steer us, get us ashore safe and look after us. Only then did we all think, gee whiz, this is for real, you know.
Yeah.
Up until then it was just another adventure, really. So again, I say, I was in the Air Force in a technical unit doing a technical job, as opposed to a person who was trained in the infantry in the army. I have no doubt they would have a different training, you know. They were at the end of the gun all the time, and they had to know how to use it. So yes, although we were armed, of course, you know, we all carried rifles.
Yeah.
You know. No, there's not. It's a hard question to answer. Naturally, when you go to war, you're going to get caught up in a lot of nasty situations, which you must, and you get a lot of frights.
Mm.
You know, some severe frights. You know, but it doesn't worry you very much. It didn't sort of worry us at that time.
Yeah,
because we knew we would come through it.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're 18 when you enlisted.
Yeah.
So how long in total did you serve for?
About 4.5 years.
4.5 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, 4.5. Yes, would be 4.5 years from when I enlisted.
Yeah.
It was from, I enlisted in 41, September 41 till March 46. Yeah, I think it was about 4.5 years.
Yeah. So did you always have confidence in the outcome of the war? Were you?
Yeah, always.
Yeah.
Always. Never. There was never any doubt.
Yeah.
Never. So even in Darwin. So in Darwin, that was a pretty big base. We had quite a few. We had three Spitfire squadrons.
Yeah.
Quite a few Liberator squadrons. Heavy, medium bombers. They used to raid. Used to do raids over towards Timor, into Japanese, where the Japanese
right,
had
yeah.
Timor, you know. We had no doubts that we would win, but then again, we used to listen to the Japanese radio at base. I don't know where they used to broadcast from. I think it's from Timor, Dili, I think.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Tokyo, it was either Tokyo A's or Tokyo N. And she used to say to us, good evening, how are all my friends in Darwin?
Yeah.
How are our emperor's 58,000 prisoners of war surviving in Darwin? Meaning that they knew that we were there,
yeah.
with a big number, there, just waiting for the invasion, waiting for something to happen, you know.
Yeah.
But it never eventuated. There were a few scares and a few alerts, you know, that there was some activity out in the Arafura Sea, and they thought perhaps there might be a carrier fleet out there or something, but nothing of any consequence.
So there were lots of POWs at Darwin, were there?
No, she was referring to ourselves as being prisoners of the Japanese, because we were just held there waiting.
Right.
See, that, no, there weren't any prisoners there, but that was their way, you know, they used to try and torment us a bit, you know, because
yeah.
there was no activity, there was no amenities up there, anything like that. You just lived in a tent and you went to work and there was nothing
yeah.
else, there was nothing to do. And it was pretty boring, really, you know.
Yeah.
And all the raids were mostly, night raids.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, you know. We lost a few Spitfires one night
right.
when they bombed our base, you know,
yeah.
bombed our Spit. But there was no other casualties. We were all in our trenches. You get plenty of warning, you know. You get a yellow warning about 20 minutes before the red, and when you get the red, well, that's the time you go to your slip trenches and
right.
and just sit and wait.
Right. So how well was Australia kept of the world situation? Like, did you really know what was going on, or pretty much in Australia, or like what? Well, this probably you wouldn't be able to answer this. Like while you're away.
Yeah.
Do you think Australians sort of were kept pretty well informed about what happened?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Oh, yes. We could write home and everything like that, of course, but our letters were always censored. You couldn't write anything about the war because you would write a letter, you couldn't seal it, and it would go to the adjutant.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't read the letter, but he would read half a page at a time.
Yeah.
If he saw the word Darwin or something like that, he'd just get a razor blade and cut that part out, you know.
Oh, right.
So quite often you'd get the letter, they'd get the letter. If you persisted in writing, you would get a letter, they would get a letter home with more cutouts than writing on it.
So, yeah.
You know, so that'd be like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But no, there was nothing, there was no information was ever withheld.
Yeah.
Or anything like that.
Right.
No. And the newspapers fairly reported everything that was happening.
Yeah.
You know, like they would tell us before we went away. We were told straight away about Pearl Harbor and where
yeah.
the Japs were. Is that what you meant?
Well, yeah. Just people back in Australia, if they sort of knew what was going on.
Yeah, they did, because all the casualty lists, the people who got killed in action, those casualty lists were always in the paper the next day, as soon as the next of kin were notified, you know. So,
yeah, yeah.
And then you would, oh no, any ships that were lost, you know, they would say missing in action. And,
yeah.
But they didn't have any details, you know, but anything like that, you know. But,
right. Well, I think that's pretty much done it.
Yeah. But you were doing a project, are you?
Yeah, this is for social education.
Well, look, I'll tell you what, if you like, I've got all this written out.
I'm not sure how much longer I've got to do it.
I think as you ask the questions, I mean, that's about as far as
yeah.
that would cover it, you know. Like even in my memoirs, I've kept a lot of it to myself, you know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I don't,
very personal.
I don't, you know, because you don't like to. There are things that I know what's happened, but I wouldn't like children to know.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
You know, so
it must have been pretty horrific,
yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thanks a lot for this, because
yeah.
I realised a lot of it was pretty personal.
But anyhow, I've got my life story written out from where I go up to, I think I'm up to about the end of the war now, actually.
Right, yeah.
You know, so
So how are they going? They're coming along?
Oh, I've got 22 paragraphs of different things. I've got a paragraph of Darwin, Belly Tap and Taylor Terry, all those sort of things in sections, you know. So that's
Great.
But if you've got any other questions, if you want to read about the Belly Tap and business or something like that, well, I can give you your number, a copy, and you can read it or whatever.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know?
It wouldn't go towards a project, I think, but I'd love to read it anyway, because this has to be in pretty soon,
That's brilliant. That answers your question.
Fantastic.
I think that's a reasonable cross-section of what it was all about.
Yeah.